at Lone, friends, to link up with somebody, indeed, that we've known for a long time. And we were first introduced to Marion Carroll 30 years ago, or not quite 30 years ago, but a very good friend of ours, and indeed very well-known travel agent, a former travel agent, Ed O'Brien, who had a very prominent travel agency in Washington, D.C. Back in 1988, Ed O'Brien organized the very first international flight from the U.S. to Knock Airport. It was on Iceland Air, and it was on Christmas Eve morning, December 24th of 1988, and I was privileged to be, you know, among those who were now making the first ever direct flight from the U.S. to Knock. That was a few months before the miracle of Knock, which involves, of course, our guest now as we head over to Athlone in County Westmeath in Ireland, and welcome back to our program, Marion Carroll. Marion, you're very welcome indeed. How are you?
I'm great now, Adrian. Thank you very much.
You know, we are obviously delighted with the news, but I want to really explain, or have you explain your own condition and the early days of your multiple sclerosis, and how that period was for you and for your husband and your family.
Well, at the early stages when I was diagnosed, I really did not know what it was. I thought it was something I was going to get better of. But I soon learned that there was no cure. As time went on, I got a little remission, then I was bad again, and this was going on for years. And then in 1985, I started going downhill slowly. There was nothing I could do about it. But in early 87, that's when I lost the power of my legs, ended up at the catheter in. I was just doubly incontinent. I had no power in my right arm, and limited power on the left. I was completely blind in the right eye, very little sight in the left eye. My speech was badly affected. The muscles in my throat were affected. To eat, the food had become very small and liquidized. And to drink was a plastic beaker with a lid and a straw. That all had to be given to me. I had to wear a collar to support my neck and head. And I also had epilepsy.
It's hard, very difficult actually to even, you know, visualize what that condition, you know, would mean and how it affected your family. For all intents and purposes, you were, you know, in an advanced stage of paralysis. How did you get by?
Well, I was very lucky because I had what everybody else wanted. I had a wonderful husband, two wonderful children, and there was a lot of love and acceptance that it became in our life that it was only an inconvenience. And I was very, very lucky because I had a wonderful husband and he took care of me.
Mm.
And my children did too. You know, it was just wonderful because Jimmy made sure, in all the years I was very bad, I never got a bed, so Jimmy took that good care of me. And
right.
Our children helped out in my care as well. Not because they had to, because they wanted to. And Saturday morning was great in our house because they'd come into the room and I was the only one that couldn't fall out of the bed because I was paralyzed. But it was a great chat and my children used to bring home friends, new friends, as I have a new visitor, and even though I was in the hospital for a respite, it was the same. That I don't think we ever thought of it affecting our lives in a sense, because the one thing we had is what everybody wants, was love.
And faith, because obviously this wasn't your first time visiting Knock. But explain to us, if you will, you know, the experience. Now, how did you get to Knock on this pilgrimage?
I had wanted to go to Lourdes that year, Adrian, but we couldn't afford it. And Gerard Lynn's a friend of mine. He's also an ambulance driver at Lone Hospital. He's in the Audrey Malta, and he just asked me if I'd like to go to Knock for a day. And it ended up that on the 3rd of September, we went down to the diocesan pilgrimage. Gerard collected me that morning with the nurse, Anne Flanagan, and they strapped me into the stretcher, and they brought me down to Knock Shrine. When we got to Knock Shrine, Jerry and Anne brought me into St. John's, the rest and care for the sick. Mm-hmm. They brought me into the nurse, and she'd done everything you do for a person in my position. And then they brought me over to the Basilica in Knock, and they placed me under the statue of Our Lady of Knock that they used in the procession. And this was very important to me because I always had my own altar at home. But for 2 months before I went to Knock, I wanted so much to go into the altar of Our Lady, my own parish church, but it wasn't accessible for wheelchairs. And here I was under her altar in Knock. And when I looked up at that statue, I thought it was the most beautiful, most friendliest statue I ever seen in my life. She was there to greet me. And I knew I was dying, and I was thinking about Jimmy Corn Anthony. But all of a sudden, I wanted another woman to talk to. It wasn't a prayer. It was just another woman I was talking to, a wife and a mother. And I just said to her, "You're a mother too. You know how I feel." Then the ceremony started. My Bishop Colin O'Reilly, he anointed me for the anointment to sit. And after I was anointed, I got restless. But when it came to the consecration of Mass, I wasn't afraid, but I wanted someone I knew. And Sister Antonia was the Eucharistic minister in our parish. And she brought me home Holy Communion every Sunday of my illness. And I knew she was there in Knock Shrine. But I got one of the stewards to look for her, and he couldn't find her. But I was glad he couldn't find her because I did not know what I wanted of her. But I received Holy Communion from my bishop. And after I received Holy Communion, I got a very bad pain in both of my heels, which is very unusual. Now, I was due to get all my drugs because of the beaker, the lid, and the straw. I decided to wait. I was home 3 days from Knock Shrine. I looked back on that Sunday and I realized I received Holy Communion normal, something I hadn't been able to do in a long, long time. Also, the pain that came in my heels, that pain went, and when that pain went, every pain in my body went with it. But it was actually when my bishop came down with the Blessed Eucharist and the monstrance for the blessing of the sick, and he came in front of the stretcher, and he held it up and he blessed me. It was at that time that I got this beautiful feeling, a magnificent feeling, and like a whispery breeze telling me that if the stretcher was open, that I could get up and walk. But I'm very down to earth and practical, and I wasn't going to tell anybody. But as it was, I ended up telling the doctors at the pilgrimage that day. He wasn't my doctor, but I knew them. And his wife came over talking to me, and I just said to her, "Would you think I was stupid, that the stretcher was open, that I could get up and walk?" And of course, she knew me all my life due to the condition I was in. So she actually called one of the nurses that nursed me in that Lone Hospital, Maureen Rafferty. And Maureen Rafferty opened the stretcher, but she came to our home the next day. She told me she only opened to pacify me. But when she opened the stretcher, my two legs swung out and I stood up straight. I wasn't even a bit stiff after all them years. But Sister Antonia noticed I was holding my head myself without the collar. I was using my arms and hands, and that my speech was perfect.
Marion, a lot of, a great number of people, and now we're going back 30 years ago, great number of people, including some of your own friends were, and you know, you can understand, very skeptical of, you know, what now has been recognized as the first healing miracle in Knock since 1879, since the apparition of the Blessed Virgin there. Were there some doubts in your own mind, with the passage of time? Did you have some, well, doubts or feelings that that this was something, you know, that perhaps didn't happen in an instant, but rather, you know, something was happening before that? You know, you were dying, frankly. You went there because you were dying. You actually did not go to Knock Shrine for a cure. As evidence.
No, I went because I couldn't get out of going.
Yeah, I know.
Again, there was never any doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I knew instantaneously I was cured.
Mm-hmm.
And every part of my body became perfect instantaneously. The muscles, my kidneys, my bladder, my bowels, my sight, my hearing.
Everything, yeah.
Everything. And Jimmy gave me my first course of drugs that morning. And that was the last I ever took. And I wasn't ready to be in school talking and answering questions for some children. And one young lad said to me, "So, Mrs. Carroll, you went cold turkey." I didn't know what he meant.
Yeah.
And I asked my husband, and I talked to my doctor. And, you know, really, I was on a lot of drugs for a long time. And to just stop taking them instantaneously was impossible in itself.
Now, what was your relationship with your doctor? You know, now you knew, and a great number of people were recognizing that there was no other explanation. This was a miracle. And at that time, you weren't talking that much about what now 30 years later and the, you know, in the intern, there was indeed... It must have been difficult for those, particularly those in the media who wanted, who were, pretty much hostile to the whole idea and the notion. What was your relationship with your doctor? What did your doctor say when now, instead of being in a wheelchair or a stretcher, you're with the doctor? What was his reaction, his first reaction?
He just, when he came out, he just said to me, "You're very sick on Friday. Something wonderful has happened." He said, "What do we do now?" I said, "I don't know. This never happened to me before." And he said, "It never happened to me before, and it took you to get me into this." But that December, as you know, Ed and Peter O'Brien are good friends of mine, and Ed had been over and done a video, and we were invited to go on the Late Late Show. And my doctor came, and he told them that I lived an existence from a wheelchair to the bed. But funny enough, Adrian, I never got a bad reaction from any media.
Yeah.
I remember one stage there was a girl came to interview me, and I spoke to her, and she said, "You know, I came to find a hole in this, but I can't, not after talking to you." And a bit like... Do you know when St. Thomas said that if he could put his finger in the wounds of Jesus, he'd only believe that he was there? Well, anybody can come to my hometown where I lived all my life, and they can meet people that knew me when I was very, very sick and knew me all my life, and the nurses that nursed me. So they can come and they will tell them how I was and how to remember me.
Were you surprised... was it important to you, because God knows the church, the Catholic Church, is very slow in making an official you know, recognition of a miracle. What are those intervening years like for you? Were you hoping that any day now that the miracle would be recognized?
Well, I think the most, I never really needed a piece of paper in one sense, but I wanted people to realize, you know, the most important thing was that it couldn't be ignored, that the true presence of the living Christ in the Eucharist and the power of the true presence. And I knew I was cured.
Yeah.
But the people needed this. It was important that people knew that, that God is there and it can happen. And you don't have to be someone special. You just be an ordinary person, another ordinary wife and mother. And people were asking me last Sunday when it was announced, is this the greatest day of my life? And it wasn't. The greatest time was coming home perfect to my family and being able to take care of my family and make sure that they were taken care of. And then the Lord gave me my ministry and it was authenticated by my bishop. And now for the last 30 years, I've been traveling wherever I'm invited and speaking and praying with people. And so it was really, you know, for to get the fact that the importance of the Eucharist and for people never to think that the Lord doesn't answer the prayers. He always answers, not necessarily what you want, but what you need. I went to Knox Shrine that day. I didn't ask for a cure. And the reason I was cured in Knock was my cure, my healing does not belong to me. This is specially gift to you and the people of the world to let you know that Jesus is there. But we're so human at times, we actually need to feel, touch and see God's love. And my cure is that gift to them. Because if I was cured for myself, I wouldn't be on this radio program. I'd be just with Jimmy and Cora and Anthony and my grandchildren and enjoying life.
How has this week been for you? Did you get advance notice that, in fact, the official recognition of this miracle, you know, was going to take place?
Yeah. I did, but I had to keep it a secret. All I could tell people, including my family, that we were celebrating 30 years. Because I knew there was a lot of people around, around England, Ireland, and Scotland, and even America, and Ireland, that would like to be part of it because they got blessings through my ministry. So I was just able to tell people, look, I'm selling 30 years cured in September, and that day I'm celebrating that in the Ardan Connacht Nice Pilgrimage. They didn't know. They got a surprise when the announcement was made. And I didn't tell my children till that morning, and my grandchildren just let it slip because they couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah. How, at this point, are a lot of, or a great number of people trying to get in touch with you, hoping that you, since you are, and since you did get a miracle, that maybe, you know, maybe you have an in. Maybe this is something that that they can benefit from either spiritually, you know, or whatever. What's this week been like for you?
Well, for me, it's been no different than any other week because people have always phoned and they've always came to the churches I was in and. I go a lot to the sick, and they've always asked me to intercede for them. And as I do tell them, when I go to them, I only bring God's love, because Jesus says, I have no ears, no eyes, no hands, no feet but yours. And when I pray with them, I present them to Jesus, and he's the healer. But, of course, I've done a lot of interviews this week in Counter of what happened. But someone asked me, when they were interviewing me on Monday evening over the phone, and they said to me, I suppose you're celebrating.
Yeah.
I said, no, actually, in Hoover, my home.
Good for you.
Because, you see, I've never changed. I'm still the ordinary Marion Carroll, And when I go and work in ministry, that's the marrying card that the Lord uses.
Yeah. I distinctly remember, you know, your being in our studio, I think that was back in 1995. And at that point, I think it would be fair to say that some people, you know, were afraid that, you know, God forbid you would have had a relapse or something else like that. But I remember distinctly your confidence. You knew that this cure, that this healing was not, you know, a temporary one, but that your life would go forward as somebody who had, you know, a great miracle, obviously, but also a mission, which you spoke about at that time, and that was, you know, to spread the word that, you know, for all the hundreds of thousands of people who go to NOC, including a great number of people who were in your condition, that in fact, you know, there are benefits, there are huge benefits. I don't think that, you know, were very few people who go to NOC and who go there, you know, in very, very bad, some of them on, you know, their last legs, literally, yes. That, you know, that they expect to, as you did, you know, stand upright and have everything okay. But there's another aspect of it, and one that you've described quite well, about this feeling, this spiritual awareness that comes on. Were you, at some point, before all of this, had you experienced some, you know, spiritual experience on, you know, at other times, or was this brand new experience?
I did. No, as a child, I did. I had TB as a child, and I was then sent to Piedmont Sanatorium, and as you know yourself, when you have TB at a lung, you're sent to Piedmont, that's more or less it, and I had a beautiful experience, my childish prayers. I was only around 7 the week before I left, and I was brought up to Piedmont Sanatorium, and that time they didn't allow your parents come to visit you much, and they told my father to come up in about 3 months to arrange to collapse one lung, and my father came. They told him to bring me home. I was cured. So my father organized the building of a grotto to Our Lady of Lourdes in our hometown because of that. And praying.
Yeah. Okay.
Overboard.
Yeah. Did you come from a very religious family, and how the, you know, for instance, was that a was your family one that had a daily rosary, a great recognition the Blessed Virgin Our Lady was, as Father Pat Payton, the Rosary Crusader, said, if you'd like to get something, go through the Mother in your petition or whatever. What was that? So you came back, you're 7, you've come back, you're, you know, cured from TB. Was the rosary a factor in your house? Was that something, or was that an object?
It was. You know, the rosary was very much in our home, and actually the homes around where we lived. And when we were children, my best friend and myself, you know, if we missed the rosary in one house, we were caught in another house. So you never got away from it. But I always loved the rosary.
Yeah.
I always loved it, and we used to kneel down, and of course, as children, then we'd be trying to learn to make one another laugh and that. But
I know.
And I grew up with the rosary.
What would you say to know, a lot of are to people who are and who have been deemed, you know, to be in their final days on earth with the incurable diseases. Is there something, obviously, if you're the first recognized miracle, healing miracle recipient, there are others that may feel, well, you know, if Marion was lucky, maybe we can do so. What do you say? What spirituality? Because you are. You're now a, you know, you heal, you take care of people that were in your condition. You and your husband. You do that. What are people expecting when they go to knock? You say you weren't expecting a cure. Are some people or a lot of the those who go to knock, are they expecting that perhaps things will get even slightly better or, you know, short of an outright cure? What do you say to them when you're taking care of them?
When people go anywhere, even in their own church, you see, when you're very, very sick, and if you go and you get a peace, an acceptance of what's happened to you, that is the healing within. And you usually find if you meet anybody that's very, very sick and looks like the Lord is going to call them home, and if they get that peace, they've got so much inside that really they're only waiting for the cure. And you'll find a lot of the times it doesn't matter because they have this tremendous peace. But the fact is, we never know. The Lord reaches out every day. I have met people through the 30 years of my ministry, and the Lord reaches out in great ways. And He, every time someone prays, He answers that prayer, but not necessarily what they want, but mm-hmm. what they need most. Because no father would ever give his child a useless gift. And it was no use. It's no use curing someone physically.
Yeah.
If they're going to be very unhappy within, if they haven't got the peace in themselves and the acceptance of life and knowing that no matter what happens, the Lord is there. But once you get the healing, you're not too worried about the cure, even though you want it. No one wants to die. Everybody wants to be well. But when you get that feeling, it's fantastic.
Marion, thank you for joining us. And again, it's a long road that has no turning, and I think it's great, absolutely a fantastic story, your ministry, and you didn't wait 30 years for, to accept, you weren't waiting for an endorsement to the church. You have been indeed a very great influence on not just on those who are hoping for healing, but for those who, you know, are indeed celebrating not just the miracle of healing, but also the miracle of faith. Thank you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
All right.
God bless.
Thank you. Indeed. throughout the world in churches and Catholic churches in particular. The song we're listening to, Lady of Knock, has indeed been the most popular song ever. It was first sung for the Papal Visit by Donna, Ireland's Donna. Irish Radio.com worldwide.